So the beats, they traveled from the north to the middle of Morocco on the Atlantic Ocean, and then they continued to the desert. But they have not, I think Burroughs is the one who really captured the spirit of the Moroccan daily life in his own very well-read, famous novel, Naked Lunch. So if you read Naked Lunch, everything which Burroughs described there is actually part of a daily Moroccan life in the 60s. You have access to drugs wherever you go. You go to the hammams and you have homosexuals. You can easily get narcotics and drugs, you know, circulated, sold and bought, you know, in your apartment. You may even get pimps who can invite people, you know, to your place to have sex, free sex, and have all kinds of whatever you may, you know, imagine. So Burroughs wrote this novel, Naked Lunch, about his own life there in Villa Muniria, which is still kept intact, you know, in Tangier. So anyone who goes to visit Tangier would still, you know, be able to look at his own desk where he used to scratch, you know, things with his knife and write down certain ideas with his own pocket knife. And they also keep his own, like, tea cup, you know, where he used to drink, and the view, you know, on the Atlantic Ocean, and you could see Spain, you know, if it is a clear day, from the spot where he used to sit in the cafe. They also still keep Paul Bowles' apartment intact, and you can go to Rick's Cafe, the American Legation, you know, everything there in Tangier. So yes, Mohamed Mrabt is very interesting guy because he was the first illiterate Moroccan, in fact, to write in the same spirit as the Beats. So he was the first to talk about homosexuality between the imams and his students, for example. Between the homosexuality as it happens, you know, in the hammams, you know, as it takes place in the hammams. When you go to the hammam, you know, you find people who are there either for, you know, to wash themselves or for other things. So he was very outspoken about these things. Mohamed Choukri, who was also translated by Paul Bowles, I think all of you read maybe another important novel which was translated by Paul Bowles, which is called For Bread Alone, Al-Khubz Al-Hafi. And I think the translation, the title does not really make sense to me as a Moroccan, because Al-Khubz Al-Hafi means khubz with nothing, which has nothing in it. So you just eat the khubz, which is bread, and you drink tea. So For Bread Alone, it may be like a war story, you know, people fighting, maybe trying to fight just for bread or anything. So it has many different connotations. But khubz al-hafi means the bread which has nothing in it. Okay? So this novel was the first, I think, in my opinion, beat novel in Moroccan literature. And it describes the story of Mohamed Choukri and his family as they were traveling from the reef, the mountains overlooking Spain, because of famine. Okay, they were, you know, they couldn't find anything to eat there in the reef, so they had to, you know, migrate from the reef mountains to Tangier. And while traveling, he described this epic travel. How they ate almost from everything they could find on the way. Dead chicken, you know, from the woods, you know, everything. So it was a very interesting, for me, a very interesting prototype of everything that is beat about the Moroccan life in the 60s. And it was translated by Paul Bowles. This novel also treats, as one of its own fundamental topics, the topic of adultery, you know, prostitution and homosexuality. So he was the first to talk about these things in the 60s, and his novel was censored. It was only circulated all over the Arab world in 2000. That's when it was first allowed to be published in different Arab countries. And when it was published before Mohamed Choukri died, you know, in 2005. So he had the opportunity to write this new introduction, foreword. He called it Kalima, which is a word, English would be for word, in which he's trying to, generally speaking, summarize his own experience of that period of Moroccan history. So let me read from, it is not included in this edition because it's an old edition by, translated by Paul Bowles. He says in that 2000 edition, he says, "Good morning, night owls. Good morning, early birds. Good morning, Tangiers embedded in a mercurial time. Here I am again, back from the other side to explore through the streets and memories, through what I have written about my past, present life, just like a somnambulist. Words, hallucinations, and scars that no words can heal. Where is my life in all this discursive weaving? Yet, the fragrance of evenings and nights crowded with fright and adventure, excitement, creep inside me, reviving ashes of embers, rendering them tunic, transparent and captivating. I am waiting for the release of a form of literature that does not ruminate. I am waiting for the release of a form of literature that does not deceive. Say your word before you die. It will eventually find its path to people's mind, heart. The most important thing is that it will forcefully arouse a passion, a sadness, or a sleeping caprice. To set a red wastelands on fire. O night owls, O early birds, O optimistic and pessimistic people, O rebellious people, O adolescents, O wise men, do not forget that the game of time is stronger than us. It is a fatal game. We can only confront it with our actual living of the death that precedes our death. Our mortification, to dance on the ropes of adventure striving for life. I say, he brings the living from the dead. He brings the living from the stinky and decomposing. He brings the living from the stuffed and beat. And I emphasize beat. He brings the living from starving stomachs. He brings the living from the marrow of those who live on bread alone." So this is his own introduction to the new edition of For Bread Alone, which I consider as being one of the first representatives of Abid literature in Morocco. And as I say again, as I said, all these, all the features, all the aspects of the Abid literature were already there, and I think that Moroccan novelists, just because they didn't have the means to write at that time, a more progressive liberal, because they were under a constant, observation of the state, they could not write anything subversive, because you know, in the 60s, that's only a decade after a long history of occupation. So instead of trying to allow a subversive literature, liberal, progressive in so many ways, in such a very critical historical moment, the focus was on the building of a country. So most of the poetry which was allowed to be published at that time was nationalistic in its own scope and its own framework as well. So most of the poets like Mohamed Lemjati and other people, they wrote poems which, in fact, extolled, you know, national unity, patriotism, solidarity between brothers and sisters in the same society. So there was no way to write something which is celebratory of, you know, liberty of freedom of sexual orientation, or something which has to do with, also the spirit for a more accepting society of different kinds of narcotics and so on. He was not allowed to write, compose and sing music, which was very like critical of Hassan II's, who was later on in his life in the 70s and 80s a dictator, and he shut down almost all the mediums to try to talk to the people. Something which people do not know about, and Shukri Muhammad Murabd, Abd Latif al-Abi, who had to leave Morocco just because he has been his voice has been like silenced when he was criticizing Hassan II, he had to leave. He started a very famous magazine, literary magazine called Sufl Anfas, which is breath, which published poems and writings critical or criticizing Hassan II and his politics. It was stopped, you know, right after 3 years or 2 years, and he had been he had to leave Morocco to Paris, and from there he started to write against the political system. So in this turmoil, historical movement, which was very critical, no one was allowed to write any kind of beat literature, but still the spirit existed before the writers even got in touch with the beats during their own visit to Morocco late in the 50s. So 1957, On the Road was already there, you know, put and waiting to be published. So they might be there 1957, late in 1957, and then 1958. That's when they were traveling there in Morocco. So let me read just from the introduction to try to give an example of the features or characteristics of the beat Moroccan literature. Maybe, you know, by reading from the first chapter of For Bread Alone. So Shukri was talking about that moment when he started to travel because of starvation, you know, there in the reef. He started to talk about, you know, how they started this epic trip traveling on foot and hitchhiking with his mother and two brothers, maybe one brother and a sister, and six of his brothers and sisters died because of, you know, the father was beating them and they didn't have enough food to you know, to survive, of course, to eat. So, surrounded by the other boys of the neighborhood, I stand crying. My uncle is dead. Some of them are crying too. I know that this is not the same kind of crying as when I hurt myself or when a plaything is snatched away. Later on, I began to see that many people cried. That was at the time of the great exodus from the reef. There had been no rain, and as a result, there was nothing to eat. One afternoon, I could not stop crying. I was hangry. I had sucked my fingers so much that the idea of doing it again made me sick to my stomach. My mother kept telling me, "Be quiet. Tomorrow we are leaving for Tangier. There is all the bread you want there. You won't be crying for bread anymore once we get to Tangier." My little brother, Abd al-Qadir, was too sick to cry as I did. "Look at your little brother," she told me. "See how he is. Why can't you be like him?" I stare at his pallid face and his sunken eyes and stop crying. But after a few moments, I forget to be inspired by his silence and begin once more to cry. When my father came in, I was sobbing and repeating the word bread over and over. "Bread, bread, bread, bread." Then he began to slap and kick me, crying, "Shut up, shut up, shut up. If you are hungry, eat your mother's heart." I felt myself lifted into the air, and he went on kicking me until his leg was tired. So this is the kind of literature that was not able to be translated at that time. And I think in so many ways it describes this broken heart because of certain social, economic, socioeconomic conditions of the people in Morocco at that time. And Mohamed Shukri, Mohamed Murad, and other people who lived during this historical moment did not speak any English. So they had no way to understand what the beats were in fact trying to do in the States. But they were doing what the beats were doing in the States on their own through discussions in cafes, through discussions with other artists and musicians in the city. Through, I think, they were not allowed to protest in the streets. Hassan II was very strict with these things and restrictive in so many ways. There was an attempt late in the 1980s to react against in the Reef because of famine again. So people took to the streets in Casablanca, in Tangier, but the king brought all his army, tanks, like, you know, shooting at people there, bombing everywhere he could to send people again back to their homes. So I think there's so much to... You mentioned something about women not being part of the Beats. I asked Anne Waldman why you think... I think you are the only one in addition to Joanne Kiger and Dan De Prima who started to join the Beats in, and they embraced in so many ways their own spirit. And she said, yes. I said, what's the reason behind this scarcity? Or how can I put it? Maybe not having so many women, feminist women at that time, although they were very active, you know, activists in so many ways during the civil rights movements, like, I forget the names, African-American women poets. And, yes, Angela Davis. That's the one I'm looking for. They were very active at that time, but they did not join the Beats. They were, maybe they had a different political agenda because it attaches more to gender, sexuality, and race issues more than it did to what the Beats were interested in. This does not mean necessarily that the Beats were not interested in discussing gender, sexuality, and race issues. They did in so many different ways, just maybe not with as vehemently as the civil rights movements, African-American theorists and writers did.